Hello everybody, Julian Charles here of themindrenewed.com, coming to you from the depths of the Lancashire countryside here in the UK. And today I'm very pleased to welcome back to the programme James Roguski, who is a researcher, author and activist who joined us earlier this year to talk about the World Health Organization and its so-called pandemic treaty, but more important, I think, to alert us to the WHO amendments to the international health regulations. And I invite listeners, of course, if you haven't heard that first interview, which had a lot of information in it, that's TMR number 293, please do go back through the archive and listen to that one again. It's TMR number 293, so that you can get a background to today's conversation, which, although it will be hopefully information packed, nevertheless will be something of an update to what is going on. So James, thank you very much for coming back on. Welcome back to TMR.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And, you know, in the span of time since then, many things have changed. So thanks for the opportunity to give everybody an update.
Wow. Yeah. And in fact, just before we started, I was mentioning the interview you did with Dr. John Campbell, which was probably only about a week ago. And you said it's all changed since then. So there we go. That's amazing. So thanks very much for getting back in touch with me about what is going on in this very murky world of the WHO captured bureaucratic nightmare, as it seems to me. So as I said before, you are one of the key researchers, maybe the key researcher in this area at the moment. So let me just invite you then to give us something of a snapshot, an update snapshot of what's going on. I mean, you have mentioned many, many times recently the date of the 1st of December, 2023, the 1st of December, 2023. It's obviously just around the corner. It looms large in your messaging at the moment. Tell us, why is this important? Why should we be concerned about any of this?
Absolutely. And if I may ask just a small favor, There are three separate things that everyone tends to get all jumbled together. So if we could compartmentalize what we talk about, and I'll do my best to try to keep it so that we talk about, you know, A, B, and C, if you will. Mm. So we'll start with the one that you mentioned. More than a year ago, on January 18th, 2022, the Biden administration quietly submitted a bunch of amendments to an existing legally binding international law, the International Health Regulation. Now, I got to rewind just a little bit. At the end of November and December of 2021, the nations that are members of the WHO called for and had a special session of the World Health Assembly. Normally, they meet once a year at the end of May, but they met twice in 2021. And the purpose of that meeting was that many nations were very unhappy. This is really a trade dispute that I don't think belongs in the WHO, but here we are talking about it. They requested that the WHO seek to negotiate either a convention, agreement, or other international instrument to ensure equity. Bunch of common words, but what does that really mean? What it means is many nations were unhappy that countries such as the United States, Canada, UK, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, and so forth were hogging up all of the jabs. And it was difficult through the early parts of 2021 for smaller nations to get contracts because supplies were somewhat limited. And you have to remember that that is the purpose of these negotiations. They are not negotiating the things that they are authorized to write regulations about. They're negotiating equity.
Right. So this was predicated, as you say, on the notion that these pharmaceutical interventions, I'm not going to call them vaccines anymore, were a good thing. Everybody should get them. And it was turning out that that was not possible at the time. So then this was a push to try to make sure that in future, everybody would have access to these on the assumption that they're good for everybody and they will work.
Exactly. And so going back to what I said earlier, about a month and a half after that declaration by the World Health Assembly that they should go forward and, you know, start these negotiations, the Biden administration, along with a handful of other nations, boom, submitted amendments to the international health regulations that didn't say a word about what the nations wanted their changes to include. And that created a firestorm among the nations who were very unhappy with the way things were going. And fast forward to the assembly in May of 2022, the Biden's proposals, for the most part, were kicked to the curb and ignored, and they were not adopted. And I feel what happened was a breaking of the rules. Biden proposed those amendments on the 18th of January, which was 4 months in advance of the assembly, which was fine. But when those were rejected, a totally new group of nations and a new batch of amendments were submitted in the middle of the assembly. There was no time for public comment. There was no real public discussion. And that set of amendments were adopted on May 27, 2022. Now, the rules of what happens after the assembly adopts amendments seems to confuse everyone, especially politicians and members of Congress or Senate or Parliament. They are under the misguided thought that anything the assembly adopts would have to come back for approval. Mm-hmm. But that is not rules of procedure. Mm. What happens is, since it was approved by the World Health Assembly, it is assumed that every nation has agreed to it, unless the head of that government, whether it be a prime minister, president, king, queen, or yes, even the Pope, because it does apply to the Vatican,
right,
they can just write a letter to the WHO and for their individual nation say, well, you know, we reject these amendments. Thank you, but no thanks.
That's interesting, because you constantly say reject. So it's not accept or reject. It has to be explicitly rejected by the leader of a country in writing to say, we do not want this conveyor belt to continue. I mean, I have this picture of these amendments being put on the conveyor belt and they go towards their destination unless they're actually taken off. So it's not accepting or rejecting. It has to be explicitly rejected by a leader. Otherwise, these things just go through automatically.
You know, that's a very good visual. Mm. The assembly put 194 nations onto this 18-month conveyor belt.
18 months, yeah.
I like your analogy quite a lot. And any nation could take their nation off the conveyor belt. If they fail to do so on December 1st, they all drop off the conveyor into the box of nations that now must adhere to the amended international health regulations. If the leader wrote a letter to the WHO and said, no, everybody else can do whatever they want, but our nation is going to stick by the old existing rules. Come December 2nd, we're going to see which nations have taken that step to protect their people from the changes that were made. Now, the changes that...
We'll come to that in a second. So this is an 18-month period. So this is from the end of May 2022 up to December the 1st. So in that time, these things have to be rejected. So I presume all these leaders all around the world are very much aware of all these amendments, the latest state of these amendments. And if nothing's happened, it looks like nothing's happening. I've not heard anything about anything being going to be rejected, you know. Presumably, they're quite happy with this. Or do you suspect that they all really do know about everything that's going on?
Well, I certainly have been spending the last 16 months attempting to raise the awareness of everyone in the world. Mm. There was a petition that had been circulated from April the 3rd to October the 3rd, and over 110,000 signatures have been collected, and Parliament has not scheduled a discussion. The request of the petition was to have a discussion about this prior to December the 1st. And so it is certainly the responsibility of anyone who is in charge of foreign policy in any nation to, you know what they are required or have the authority to do. And so it would be the height of incompetence if they were unaware of it. And so what I would encourage everyone to do, whether they be in the UK or any other nation on the planet, contact all of your public servants at whatever level and ask them, are you aware that international law was changed, amendments were adopted on March 27, 2022? They'll probably be greeted with silence. Then you can ask, have you read the documents? Do you know what was changed? you'll probably be greeted with silence again. In the particular case of a prime minister or a president, do you realize that only the titular head of the nation has the authority to just write a simple letter to reject the amendments for their nation? Are you going to do that?
Yeah.
Because I have to explain from a United States perspective why these were adopted.
Oh, of course. Okay. Of course.
Yes.
I'll just come back to, before you go on, and it will be interesting to hear what you have to say about that, of course. I'll just echo what you said about the 100,000 signatures having been reached. And I picked up only a few days ago a letter through Twitter, or now called X and all that. Andrew Bridgen, MP, has written to the Right Honourable Penny Mordaunt at the UK Parliament and asked her. I'll just quote the letter. He's trying to find out what's going on. This is even within Westminster, you know. Dear Penny, I'm writing to ask if you could confirm that there will be debate scheduled on the amendments to the International Health Regulations following a petition that reached over 100,000 signatures. I would be grateful if you could let me know whether a date has been confirmed. And if it hasn't, if you could notify my office as soon as it is, I look forward to hearing from you. Yours sincerely, Andrew Bridgen, MP. And this is on the 25th of September, 2023. So, you know, even within Westminster, there's this, you know, what's going on? Is anybody paying attention?
Government being what it is, it would be likely that if they have a debate, it would be sometime after December 1st. Okay. You know, thank you very much for your tardy response. It certainly is too late. But it's not the case that we, the people, or the members of parliament have any possibility of stopping this other than to put political pressure on the leader of the nation to write a letter.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that in decades past, when the international health regulations were adopted in 1969 and 2005, a different procedure was agreed upon.
Right.
And when that happened decades ago, we the people and our representatives gave up any say in the matter. If the unelected, unaccountable, unknown delegates, bunch of bureaucrats, meet in Geneva and decide to amend the international health regulations, the only person with the power to reject them is the leader of the individual nation.
Right. So this is under Article 61, is that right, of the international health regulations themselves?
That is correct.
Right.
And you have to look at this in the context, you know, from the United States. I live in California. The genesis of this, please understand that the Biden administration's first term in office ends on January 20th, 2025.
Mm.
He may get a second term. A new president may come into office. Our elections are, you know, in November of 2024. The original proposed amendments would take that 18-month period of rejection and shorten it to 6 months. Now, if amendments are adopted in May of 2024, 6 months will take you to approximately December 1st of 2024, still within the Biden administration.
Mm.
So he was trying to squeeze the time frame down so that he would be able to not reject the next round of amendments before possibly a new president was to take office in January. Well, he didn't get his way. And they shortened the time period to reject them down to 10 months. Mm. The process by which this happens is so wrong. The people have no say. Parliament has no say. The unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats make decisions, and only the leader of an individual nation can reject them. Mm. And Biden wants to shorten the time period for that. And there has been zero public comment.
It's all so opaque. It's like an abdication of responsibility by our elected representatives. Oh, just leave it to the bureaucrats. And then nobody gets told what's going on at all. And it's as if the bureaucrats then can just play in the sand as much as they like and nobody pays any attention, which is extremely dangerous if they have real power, as you describe they do.
So
can I check with you then, this group of amendments that will go off the edge of the conveyor belt on the 1st of December, this is only a subset of amendments. I understand that there are hundreds more waiting for the next part of the conveyor belt. What is it particularly about this group of amendments that bothers you if they are not objected to by the 1st of December? What's so bothersome about them?
The bothersome aspect of it is modest, not the end of the world.
Right.
They want to shorten the time period from 18 to 10 months.
Right. Okay.
The reason for raising the awareness of it is the process by which the next round of amendment will go through.
I see.
We have no power to stop without massive public outcry.
And you would think
raise our voices and scream and yell.
Yeah, but you would think if this was, well, obviously not an open, transparent process at all, but you think if in the ideal, you think that's what it should be, and therefore you wouldn't be shortening the period for scrutiny and rejection. You would be expanding that, and you would be telling everybody about what's going on, and you wouldn't just make it default. You would say, this has to be explicitly accepted. Well, let's even involve the populations and let's talk about it and get the media talking about it. And yet there is a deafening silence everywhere about this. And there's always this, you know, let's rein in the amount of time that anybody's got to even begin to access this information or even find out there's something going on. By the time you find out it's going on, it's, oh, it's next week. You know, the whole thing absolutely stinks, as far as I'm concerned, of secrecy and hidden agendas.
Let me expand on that. I had said I'd like to compartmentalize what we're talking about. So if that is, you know, section A of our discussion, let's move on to part B.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
At the same time that the amendments were adopted on May 27th, 2022, the World Health Assembly, and this is my language, okay? This is not something you're going to find in their document.
Okay.
The nations who were taken by surprise by the Biden administration's attempt to push through a bunch of amendments that did not address equity, they adopted a resolution to start a working group. And my words to it are, I think they wanted to say very clearly to the Biden administration, you want to try to ram through some amendments to change the international health regulations? We'll show you how to do that. And they set up a work group. And they told all of the nations in the world, by September 30th, 2022, please submit whatever changes you would like to make to the international health regulations. So they did, and all of those proposals were submitted by last September, more than a year ago. They were kept secret until mid-December, but then they were published. And there was 197 pages from 94 nations with over 300 amendments. The Biden administration did resubmit the ones that they had from the previous year. So theirs is now a drop in the bucket compared to this hundreds of proposed amendments.
Right.
Those were made public, and I've been reporting on them since mid-December. They've had so far five separate meetings that they go for many days, often a week, since then. And the last one was October 2nd to the 6th.
Okay.
And in that, they dropped what I think is a bombshell. The chair, Dr. Abdullah Asiri from Saudi Arabia, said that they're not going to meet the deadline. They're not going to come to an agreement or a package of targeted amendments to submit. The deadline would be the week of January 22nd. 26th in the year of 2024, which is 4 months in advance of May's World Health Assembly, which begins on May 27th. He said, we're not going to meet the deadline. Then at the meeting on Monday the 2nd, they had Stephen Solomon, who is the legal counsel for the WHO, go through contortions to basically read Article 55, which says very clearly that any nation or group of nations that want to propose amendments shall do so 4 months in advance of the next World Health Assembly. And then they proceeded to go through contortions to explain the plot that they are planning to just ignore that rule and schedule negotiating meetings all the way up to May of 2024. And whatever they end up negotiating, if they can conclude it, they'll submit it whenever they want to, ignoring that 4-month period of time, which would be notice for everyone to consider what they might adopt.
Yeah.
And so more secrecy, more lack of transparency, more hurried decision making for amendments that, from everything I've been able to glean from what they've been talking about, they're actually not negotiating amendments that they are authorized to negotiate.
Right. Because that's key, isn't it? I mean, whatever the amendments are, you know, if there isn't time to scrutinize them properly and they're being rushed through, then I don't care what they are. I disapprove. You know, there needs to be openness about this. However, of course, if they are egregious, then that's even worse. So perhaps you could explain what some of this is so that we can get an idea of why these should be in the open, although they should be anyway. Even if they're all fluffy and there's nothing really to object to, we should all know everything about them. But nevertheless, give us an idea of what these are really like.
In Article 21 of the WHO Constitution, it very clearly says that the WHO can, the World Health Assembly, not the Director General, not the Secretariat, not the bureaucracy, but the Assembly, the delegates that meet once a year, that they do have the authority to write regulations on certain categories. I'll name a couple of those categories. They're supposed to write regulations about labeling and advertising. Mm-hmm. So I would appreciate it if they did write regulations to eliminate those blank inserts that came with the jab.
Right.
Those inserts are labeling, and they're supposed to give people complete information so that they can make an informed decision. They're supposed to write regulations about the purity of biological products that are sold in the international market. Well, it would be great if they had regulations requiring quality assurance, you know, the latest information, which is old information, but now people are talking about it. Oh, my goodness, look at that. There are well over any acceptable limit of circular DNA plasmids, you know, wrapped in lipid nanoparticles in these mRNA jabs. Mm. The WHO should be negotiating regulations to prevent that sort of contamination.
Right. International health regulations. Yeah, it's in the title.
That's what they're supposed to be. They're supposed to be writing regulations for diagnosis and testing specifications.
Right.
Well, anybody who's even remote at the PCR process knows that it's not a diagnostic tool. And I would love to see regulations limiting the fraud that has occurred in all of the things that I just mentioned. Mm. They're also supposed to be writing regulations for nomenclature or terminology.
Okay.
Well, I have news for you. There is no legal definition for the word pandemic or vaccine or case or safe and effective. And so those words are used, you know, in the media,
yeah,
but they have no legal meaning. And it's the WHO's job, you know, they're supposed to clarify the language in addition to requiring death certificates.
Right. Indeed. So So I can see why it's in their interests, given their funding, particularly, not to take part in that business of clarification, because it might make things rather too obvious and might impede further business prospects in future. Yeah, I get how that hangs together, but it's...
So suffice it to say that we have not been allowed to see any revised version, second draft, third draft, whatever. It's all been done in secret. Mm. They want to continue that process all the way up to the last minute and then purport to adopt it without any public comment whatsoever.
Right. Okay.
And so that request is out there through Andrew Bridgman and the people Parliament to hold such a public discussion.
Absolutely. So is it still the same landscape of concern that we talked about before? So that, as you say, instead of these regulations clarifying everything, it's more a shift to the facilitation of a medical mega business. So now it's about pathogen surveillance, and it's about dangerous, you know, incredibly dangerous research, you know, with this gain of function and creating demand for health products and, you know, tying everything up in bureaucratic red tape to the benefit of corporate interests. Is it still that landscape of distortion that we talked about last time?
Absolutely, and that's a good segue to the third part.
Okay.
What you said, I absolutely agree with. I actually refer to it as the pharmaceutical hospital emergency industrial complex.
Oh, yes.
And so the third aspect of this is most people talk about all of the things that we're talking about here, and they say the pandemic treaty. And the problem with that is there is no language in the WHO's constitution that says they can negotiate a treaty. It says that they can negotiate regulations, a convention, or agreement. Now, when people think of a treaty, they think of, well, you put words on paper, everybody agrees to it, they sign off on it, you're done. But a convention is a completely different thing. In an analogy, if you were going to sign a contract with someone, and at the last minute, they put half a ream of paper and stapled it into the contract. It was all blank. And they said, well, don't worry about that. We'll have our people fill in all the blank protocols later. Just go right ahead and sign that you're going to agree to whatever we decide later.
Yeah, this is the framework convention model. And this was the same with climate change, wasn't it?
Exactly.
It seems to be a state of the art of how you get things agreed and then add in the details later. And of course, the devil is in the details.
Well, the devil is in the details, but angels will bring the awareness. And so shining on that simple fact that they're not reaching a final agreement, they're agreeing to shift authority to an unknown group of people that they call the Conference of the Parties. Now, it sounded like you're familiar with the Framework Convention on Climate Change from 1992. At the beginning of December, they're going to be having their 28th Conference of the Parties, and they make decisions that we have to deal with in our lives, but we don't have any input, we don't have any say, because our, quote, leaders agreed to a framework convention back in 1992 in regards to climate change.
Yeah.
So anybody who's talking about the treaty, they need to stop calling it a treaty. Call it what the WHO calls it. It's a convention agreement that makes all of the difference in the world. And at the moment, just like with the amendments, we the people have absolutely no idea what might be in that document.
Well, it's open-ended, isn't it? I suppose it's all part of this philosophy, isn't it, of the having explicitly to reject rather than accept amendments as they come along. I know it's the amendments are different from the framework, unless I understand that's the case, because the framework convention is the treaty, is that right?
Correct. Now,
But it's the same philosophy, isn't it? There's this agreement, and then it's just assumed that things are agreed as more and more detail is put in, as I say, more and more devilry is put into the system. It's just assumed that's the case unless there's an objection. And that's all part of the way that structure works, which itself is objectionable and never should have been brought into being in the first place. I mean, people need to realize that that's the case, that it's structurally very unsafe to proceed in this way.
I absolutely agree. And my favorite word for it is diabolical.
Yeah.
The process is not what the average person believes is appropriate.
No. No, it's based on trust. And yet we're talking about an institution that really does not deserve our trust. I mean, trust is something that's earned, isn't it? You don't just default to, yes, I'll just trust anybody's authority. You earn that trust. And yet, from what I can see, particularly over the last 3 years, I can't see evidence why I should trust the WHO. It shouldn't be based upon trust. It should, in fact, be based upon suspicion, so that we are all scrutinizing what's going on. And then perhaps if they can spend the next 20 years, you know, getting it all right all the time, we can say, okay, I'll give you a degree of trust in future, but not at the moment, not based on past records.
My advocacy centers along it's time to leave this relationship.
Yeah.
In the United States, I've been promoting legislation, House Resolution or H.R. 79, which is the WHO Withdrawal Act. And just this morning in Canada, people of Canada have put forth a petition to exit the United Nations and the WHO. You can find that on CanadianPetition.com. the bill in the United States you can find on exitthewho.com. And people around the world can go to exitthewho.org. And there are groups in several dozen nations who've been working to, you know, spread this information because it's structurally corrupt. Yeah. We need to start over. And up until 1948, I think we were doing just fine without a World Health Organization.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, this accusation of corruption, I think, is so easy to evidence. I mean, I think people should know this quotation from Margaret Chan, who, of course, was a previous director general, before Tedros, of course. But this is only back in 2015 in the documentary Trust Who. She was asked by a journalist called Lillian Frank, you know, isn't it your responsibility, Dr. Chan, to step down before your second term in order to signal to the world that your organization, your ship, is sinking? Okay, so the interesting thing is Margaret Chan's response to this rhetorical question. She said, and I've heard her say this, it's not something I've just read, I've seen a video of her saying this in this particular conference. Margaret Chan said, "You ask an excellent question. If I tell you, WHO as an organization, only 30% of my budget is predictable funds. Other 70%, I have to take a hat and go around the world to beg for money. And when they give us the money, they are highly linked to their preferences, what they like. It may not be the priority of the WHO. So if we do not solve this, you know," and she makes a hand gesture, "we are not going to be as great as we were." So, okay, so this is 8 years ago or so, and she's saying 70% of the money that comes in has got strings attached. I mean, this is just open to corruption. Surely everybody can see that. They can't really do anything that their sponsors don't want them to do. This is incredibly dangerous.
Well, let me give a bit of an update. I published an article back in May of 2023 where they had released their financial information for the 2022 year. Mm. And that 70%, 30% split that she's talked about is now 84% and 16%. The funding that is coming from the nations has actually gotten smaller. So her explanation of the problem has only gotten worse.
Yeah.
And on top of that, in their financials for 2022, their total budget was $3.8 billion that they spent. A full $1 billion, 30% of their total expenditures, went to 8,851 employees who earned an average of $120,000 a year. Well, what do those bureaucrats do other than generate the infodemic that the WHO claims that people like myself are creating, pointing out, you know, the problems with what's in their information? Mm. They only spent $500 million on medical supplies. They spent twice as much on salaries. And you know, what were those medical supplies? It's very hard to find the details. The corruption, the mismanagement, and the ill design, I believe, is unrepairable.
Yeah.
We need to leave the WHO, and we don't need to start over. We don't need centralized control over individual people's health.
No. The whole thing seems to be setting up a machine to benefit massive corporate interests so as to find new pandemics. I've got a quote here I've got to share from Ramesh Thakur, so former UN Assistant Secretary General, right? So a quote from him: "The reforms amount to a WHO power grab at the behest of big pharma and big donors." And in that particular essay where that quote comes from, he was basically saying, these are not quotes, but this is the essence of what he was saying, is that that they want to focus attention away from normal endemic diseases towards relatively rare pandemics. And they will create a sort of perverse incentive to find pandemics or even to define them into existence. They don't really exist, but, you know, to make the definition such that you can say they exist, and then sort of consolidate the gains of all those who benefited from the COVID-19 experience. And he says they will create a, this is a quote, "a self-perpetuating biopharmaceutical complex." A self-perpetuating biopharmaceutical complex. That is a terrifying prospect. You know, so many people in the world trust this to do good throughout the world. It's for the benefit of the people. One might even think of it in a kind of left-wing kind of sense. Oh, it's there to stand for the people against the interests of big business. You know, it's for the people. But instead, just judging by what he's saying there, it's being increasingly captured. It has been captured and it's going on being captured to create a machine of profiteering at the expense of people.
The excerpt from that article that you quoted, I think is wonderfully accurate. To put it in slightly different words, they're claiming that they want to have an agreement that would prevent the next pandemic.
Yeah.
While they're actually building the infrastructure that is far more likely to seek out and find the pathogen with pandemic potential, build out a laboratory network to bring that in to experiment and learn from it, turn it into what they call medical countermeasures, and then have this fear-mongering component because they want to change the language to be able to declare an emergency, not when there is a given number of people who become sick or died, but if they find something that has the potential to cause an emergency. The phrase perpetuating industry, it's exactly spot on. I put together thepeoplesdeclaration.com, and it's a very simple statement. What they should be negotiating, they're not, and they're building out an industry that the proper negotiations for a treaty to end biological warfare and gain-of-function research is the negotiation that we need. Mm. But if you go all the way back, special session of the WHA, the World Health Assembly, at the end of November, beginning of December 2021, the charge that was given to these negotiators was to negotiate equity. They want to have all of that infrastructure built in the nations that currently cannot afford to do biological weapons research. Mm. It's absolutely insane. And people are talking about it, but there's a cloud of misperception and misunderstanding. Thank you for giving me the opportunity, bringing in the information that you did, because it will hopefully bring some clarity. This is as evil could be, given the face, we're trying to save you from the next pandemic.
Yeah.
They're doing exactly the opposite.
Exactly the opposite. One of the things I find so incredible about this is that we've just had this last 3 years, the beginning of which almost certainly was a lab leak, or worse. But at the very least, a lab leak. And here the idea is to step this up for the surveillance purposes and such. But the more of that kind of thing you do, the more likely you are to have a leak, or worse. This, as you say, is completely on its head.
The lack of awareness of what they're really doing is astonishing. But once people do come to an awareness of it, it is absolutely enraging. You know, there's a saying and a meme that's out there, if you're not enraged, you're not paying attention. It could be that you're paying attention, but you're being deceived. And it still remains to be seen. We have not been allowed to see the current status of the documents for the amendments that are being considered for next year. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be submitted by January, so we would have 4 months to see them. And they're just going to ignore that.
Yeah.
The treaty or convention agreement, as it's more properly called, has always been accepted that they're going to negotiate right up to the last minute, and we won't necessarily get a chance to see that. And the procedure by which amendments are adopted and then go into legally binding force, we've seen absolute silence, with the exception of Andrew Bridgen, for 16 months. And December 1st is the deadline. At some point, I trust that people will awaken to the fact that structurally, this is deeply, deeply flawed.
Yeah, it is. It is fundamentally flawed, exactly. And I will just add to the defense of a few people other than Andrew Bridgen. There is a little group of people here, members of parliament here in the UK, who are clearly concerned about this. So we have Andrew Bridgen, we have Esther McVeigh, Danny Kruger, John Redwood, David Davis, Philip Davies, Christopher Chope. Now, there may be some others, but those are the only names that I know. And then we have had, not a parliamentary debate not a proper House of Commons debate, but a committee debate, very low profile. I think most people don't know about it at all. But it did take place, I think it was back in April 2023. But I mean, you've only got a handful.
I can speak to that.
Yeah. Well, you've got let's just consider you've got 7 or 8 MPs or whatever who seem to be bothered about this out of 650. What's going on there? And that's amazing. So few people.
More than a year ago, there were 100,000 signatures to have a debate, not on the amendments.
Yeah.
And so the massive amount of confusion that was going on last year, at that point in time, when that particular petition was being circulated, the quote-unquote pandemic treaty or the WHO convention agreement did not exist. They had not even put out the first version. And so that particular petition suffered from absolute misinformation going on in the media.
Right.
Nevertheless, it garnered over 100,000 signatures in 2 weeks. And it took 11 months for Parliament to schedule a debate on April 17th. Now, it was a full debate. It was supposed to, everyone in Parliament was invited, but the 6 folks that you mentioned and a couple of others had a discussion. But what they were discussing at that point in time is now ancient history.
Okay, yeah. It wasn't in the main chamber. It wasn't in the main debating chamber of the House of Commons. It was in a committee room, okay, fairly big, and there was plenty of space for maybe several dozen people. So yes, it was no doubt open to everybody, but the amount of interest shown was pathetic, really.
Right. And so there's a standing request from a public petition through Parliament. More than 110,000 people in the UK have requested a debate before the deadline of December 1st for the amendments that are, as you put it so wonderfully, on this conveyor belt. I suspect that they'll delay the discussion on that as long as they can.
Until afterwards, yes.
But please understand that it's my suspicion that the wrong debate will be held. It isn't about the details of the amendments. The debate should be that neither the people nor Parliament has any power at all to stop this.
Right. And now I'm just going to say, because that came up in that previous debate in April, I don't know who the man was, but there was a particular individual who a number of times contradicted people like Danny Kruger. So, you know, in a debate, you sort of give way. So they said, well, I'll say something. And so Danny Kruger, whoever it was, say, OK, I'll give way. And this person then a number of times said things exactly like that. Oh, this is an overreaction. Of course, Parliament will be able to decide on any of these things going forward. You know, we're sovereign here. You know, you're worrying too much about things. The power of the people will not be taken away. All this kind of thing. And I thought, have you really read these? You know, this language of binding. You know, what does that mean? Nothing? I mean, there's a debate as to quite what it does mean, but it bugs me that that language is there, or non-binding is removed from the, you know, from the wording.
I would like to try to clarify this, because in my analysis, what everyone seems to be missing, the details of what were in the documents that we've been allowed to see, is not what people think it is. This is a venture capital perspective. They are simply talking about a transfer of wealth to build out an industry that can be used to fearmonger people and manufacture poisons to be injected into them. The issue that they're discussing in these negotiations, as per the document that started the negotiations, is focused on equity. Everybody keeps talking about sovereignty, and that's a piece of the puzzle. This is about money and investing in the pharmaceutical, hospital, emergency, industrial complex in more nations, because they were successful in tricking and coercing maybe 75% of the people in the developed world. But they failed to, you know, they only got about 25% in the developing world.
Well, so it does behoove us to talk about all of this with people. And yet this is so, so difficult. the media itself, when I say I'll talk about the news, you know, I very rarely watch the news, and I mean that in inverted commas, you know, the sort of news that's on the BBC or Channel 4 or ITV here in the UK. This sort of thing is rarely, if ever, on the news. It's considered to be sort of outside the acceptable discourse. This legacy media creates an Overton window of acceptable discourse. And so I find with people in everyday life, these sorts of things are not within the possibility of discussion without one being considered a conspiracy theorist, a nutcase, etc. So what I'm saying here is I think a lot of people feel this. I feel this. How do we get over that social constriction to talk about such matters?
I'll offer a suggestion, and it's the difference between the lecturing method of learning or teaching and the Socratic method of asking questions. So let me offer some possible questions to ask. Okay, if you ever had the opportunity to speak to your member of parliament, very simple question. Are you aware that the World Health Assembly did adopt amendments to the international health regulations on May 27, 2022. Are you aware that they did that? Straightforward question. That's a yes or a no answer.
It'll be a no.
Yeah. Have you read the amendments that were adopted?
That'll be a no.
Do you understand the implications of those amendments?
No.
If they're honest.
Yeah.
How does it make you feel that there's not a damn thing that you can do about it? Because the system is structured so that we the people and you, member of parliament, have no power. The power was given away decades ago. How does it feel to be a legislator that is impotent?
Okay, well, let me play the part then. This is devil's advocate, of course, but somebody would, I think, quite possibly say to me if I posed those questions, say, well, yeah, but, you know, the system works. There'll be people who are checking these things to make sure that nothing egregious is taking place. Yeah. We're talking about the WHO here, you know, of great standing in the world. There's nothing to worry about.
And so have you read the documents?
No, but I'm sure people of great stature and moral integrity have read the documents.
Are you going to read the documents?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I trust the system to work. It's always worked very well. Look at how the vaccine saved the pandemic.
Is your job to represent the wishes of your constituents? I'm expressing to you that I am not pleased with your work in representing my desire to have our nation exit from this system that I believe is deeply flawed. Your job is in jeopardy because you're not doing your core responsibility of representing the people that elected you. I wonder who might be running against you in the next election. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day. You no longer have my support because you can't even comprehend what the definition of your job is.
Well, I could see if enough people wrote to their members of parliament or Congress people, etc., in that manner, then that might well have an impact. I'm thinking, again, just about ordinary people speaking one-to-one with fellow citizens.
It's the same thing. I'll do it again.
Okay. Because I can't vote out my next-door neighbor. If they don't want to listen to what I've got to say, that's it.
Oh, well, here's the point. The point to take home from this is to ask questions.
Yeah. Okay?
If your neighbor is wearing a mask, you might say, that's an interesting mask. Why are you wearing that mask? Is that the best mask? What study did you look through to determine that that mask is the best mask for you to wear? Why are you wearing that particular mask? There are so many brands. See, I've done construction work. And I've done dirty jobs where the air had pollutants in it, and I wanted to protect my lungs. And I wouldn't have worn that mask to protect my lungs. I wonder why you chose that one.
Oh, because
you might go to the Army Navy Surplus Center and buy a World War One, you know, chemical gas mask with goggles over the eyes. Aren't you concerned that a pathogen might float into your eye and then drain down into your sinuses and into your throat and into your body, why aren't you wearing goggles along with that mask?
Well, because throughout the pandemic, the government was saying that we should wear masks, and the kinds of masks that were being used were like this one, and everybody was very happy with those, so obviously these work.
So how long have you not been thinking for yourself and only obeying dictates of government? My point is, and I think you get it.
I do, yes.
When we try to lecture someone, the energy is aggressive.
Yes.
And so they become defensive. But if you ask a question that they cannot answer, at any point in that conversation, you can just walk away and let that pregnant question keep growing in their mind. Mm. It really comes from The Matrix. You know, Neo was asked, if you're familiar with the movie, you know, it feels like there's a splinter in your mind, right? And what we need to do is stick those splinters in other people's minds.
Yes.
Which jab did you get? Did you get the Pfizer or the Moderna or the AstraZeneca? Why did you make that decision? You know, the Pfizer only had 30 micrograms, but the Moderna had 100. How many boosters have you had? When are you going to get your next one? Are you up to date on your booster? Mm. Are you going to take boosters every 4 months for the rest of your life? Mm. If you ask questions, quite frankly, then you walk away. Mm. You walk away and let them ponder.
Yes. And you're quite right. I'm sure that the vast majority of people did not think through the various decisions they were making during the last 3 years or so, because we were not encouraged to think. I think we were encouraged not to think. We were encouraged just to react through fear. And so we left, many of us anyway, left the thinking to other people. And so many of the decisions that we made, we don't really have a rational justification for at all. So I can see how it would make people uncomfortable to think, just a minute, why am I still? Why am I still wearing this mask? 3 years later, why am I still doing this? So I can see that's a powerful way of going about this, and fits very much with a lot of things that David Charalamba said to us in a previous interview. Can I just say that one thing that's very clearly come out of this, which is hopeful, is that this 1st of December deadline is not what I thought it was. I thought this was much more of a game changer.
Right.
Obviously, it's regrettable. There's too much opacity. It looks like this is going to go through, whatever. But this isn't the end of it, is it? There's a lot yet to happen. So there still is time, actually, for people to come to an understanding, for these questions that you've just been talking about to be asked with one neighbor to another, and to write to representatives and kick up a fuss about this.
Oh, yeah.
Kick up a huge fuss about this. There is still a lot of time. So it's not as if it's all baked in and there's nothing we can do.
Let me give an idea that just came into my head. I've never thought of this before, but this conversation has stimulated some interesting ideas. Could you envision a handheld mirror? Get a photograph of your prime minister or your health minister and put it on the back of the mirror and hand the mirror to someone and ask them, which side of the mirror is the person who's responsible for your health?
Yes. Yeah, I like that.
Okay. Hmm. And so if you get creative and you realize the way to open up people's minds is to not try to shove more in, but to ask them questions where the answers make them think.
Mm. Okay, can I just put one last thing to you?
Yeah.
This is by way of hopefulness again. You may correct me, but I know there are these deadlines, 18 months after this thing has been adopted or that's been adopted, etc. I know these can sound quite frightening, as if once that's happened, there's nothing you can do about it. But I wonder whether we're making a mistake in concentrating upon those deadlines. I mean, they're not unimportant, but I'm getting the impression that really what's going on here is an ongoing process. Go back to the conveyor belt. Things are put on the conveyor belt and then they reach the end and more things are put on and it reaches the end. And really, I wonder whether we should be taking our eyes off, not completely, of course, but off worrying about the details so much. And I think you said similar things to this throughout the conversation. But instead, realize that this is a state of being that we need to enter, of doing exactly what you're saying, asking questions, causing a stir, writing to our representatives, and not worrying so much about when the next deadline is. Because I think that can be debilitating. You can feel like, oh, well, there's nothing I can do then, because there's so little time before the next corner is turned. But if we think it's more open-ended what's going on here, it's one wave after another of the similar process that's going on, then we can feel like, well, I can stick the spanner into this machine from now on by talking to more people, asking more questions, writing more letters. And the more of us who do that and continue to do that, the more we can slow that machine down. Does any of that make any sense?
There's a certain amount of truth to that. There's a certain amount of disagreement mm-hmm. to that. Because deadlines tend to get people to take action. People will procrastinate for 16 months. Mm. And it isn't until you say, hey, the deadline's coming up. And, you know, deadlines are real. To sign a petition, to reject an amendment, whatever it may be. A different view is to do less trying to forcefully convince people of the information that you want them to know. If you ask, and this is a super generic question, okay? Mm. If you had some, whatever information it might be, and you send it to somebody, and you say, can you give me your opinion of this information? It could be on any topic. It could be something that you agree with or something that you very much disagree with. Send them that information and ask them to give you their opinion. Judge what their opinion is and determine for yourself whether or not you would rather pick a fight with them and argue about it or move along to find someone else who might be an ally that you could work together with. Mm. Now, a very generic question that you can ask anybody at any time. What was the first red pill for you? Now, if they've never been red pill and they say, I don't know what in the world you're talking about, then I would suggest you take the advice from the movie The Matrix and realize that that person is not someone that is likely to communicate with you. Mm. If they ask you, what do you mean, take the red pill? Oh, red pill means you challenge your own assumptions. What's the first time you ever challenged your own assumptions or the official narrative? And if they struggle to find anything that they've ever challenged in their life, I suggest you move along. Mm. Now, you might open up an explosion where that person is so happy to tell you what they've learned. You know, they used to believe one thing, but then they learned what they feel now is closer to the truth. And then you can ally with that person on that issue. Mm. And, you know, if they're completely stuck in the matrix and they do not want to leave, you would be better off to spend your time looking for someone who wants to go to work and find more allies. Literally in Canada, if you go to freedomrising.info/allies, you'll see organizations of all shapes and sizes all throughout Canada. You know, people are working together. There are millions of people. They're not trying necessarily to convince somebody to change their mind. They're organizing. Yeah. And that's what we need to do. Find your allies. Mm. Ask them some questions that their answers identify their frame of mind. And if they are deeply opposed to everything that you stand for, leave them with a thought-provoking question and just let that splinter dig its way into their brain.
Yeah.
But go work with people who want to make this world a better place.
Absolutely. Yes, and as I said before, a lot of what you say there chimes with the kind of things that David Charalambos of the Reaching People Project discussed on this program, I don't know, about a year ago or so. Don't be confrontational. Ask people questions. Find out what they think. Address them as individuals with their own concerns, etc., and allow them to dig into their own minds, not just impress upon them what you think. And yeah, it makes a lot of sense. There's a lot to that, and I do suggest people go and listen to that interview if they haven't heard his advice on that, because it's very consistent with what you say there. So I think that's all very hopeful for us, actually. Just to go back to that point about deadlines, I suppose it depends upon who you are as a person. When I see a deadline, I tend to feel rigid. There's nothing I can do. It's a deadline. It's fast approaching, etc. But it depends on how you tick. You know, for some other people, it might be just exactly what you need to speed into action. So yes. Okay. So I mean, the thing is that I do take a lot of hope from this conversation, actually. There does seem to be kind of an ongoing window of opportunity here to make a difference. to speak to people and to take action. And I know each one of us is very small, but add us together and it's going to make a difference, I do believe. So thank you very much indeed for coming back to give us this update. Maybe at some point in the future, you would come on again to give us an update of the update, and we'll see where things are up to.
Anytime. Well, they're planning on providing us with the new version of the convention agreement right around Halloween. We're likely to get a trick. I don't think we're going to get a treat, but we'll have something to talk about after Halloween.
Okay. Well, I look forward to speaking to you again, James. Thanks very much for coming on, because people are interested and very concerned about this, of course, and it's good to get some clarity as to what actually is happening with this. So, yeah, it's been great to speak to you again. Thanks very much.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Julian. I appreciate it.
Show notes for this program can be found at The Mind Renewed at themindrenewed.com. Podcast music by the brilliant Anthony Rajakoff, attribution non-commercial share alike 4.0 international. You have been listening to me, Julian Charles, and my guest, James Roguski. And I very much look forward to speaking to you again in the near future.